Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in the book of Psalms, chapter 13. I will entitle this psalm, How Long, O Lord? This is a very short psalm, verses 1 through 6. The title of the psalm is For the Director of Music or for the Choir Master, a Psalm of David. Very simple title. It tells us that this is a Davidic psalm. Psalms number 2 through 13 have been Psalms of David. We start now with Psalm 13, verses 1 through 4. How long, O Lord, David says to God, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart all the day? How long will my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Enlighten my eyes, or I will sleep the sleep of death. And my enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my adversaries will rejoice when I am shaken. Well, this psalm is an example of the idea of Deus absconditus, as the Latin has it, the hidden God. That's a big theme in devotional, pious, and orthodox mystical writings, as I said in the introduction in Psalm 1, in the audio covering Psalm 1. This idea of God being hidden is an experience that is common for all Christians, as the NIV Study Bible put it. Our prayers may go unanswered year after year. We may wrestle continually with a problem and never find spiritual insight to explain it, or we may endure ongoing suffering with no relief in sight. That's pretty negative. I always like to say that, yeah, you'll get into temptations, but God always delivers us. There's a verse, I can't remember the exact verse, that says that God delivers us from them all, from all the tribulations. There is no tribulation known to man that God is not able to deliver us from them all, as Paul told the Corinthians. So trials, although they seem interminable, will eventually end. And even if they don't and you die, you'll be in heaven with Jesus. But yes, it's a big problem when God doesn't show up when you pray immediately. This is something I'm sure that the Copenhagenites have never experienced, because they have instant answers to their prayer because they have faith. They have enough faith that it happens. Well, Job had faith too. Look how long he had to go and suffer. God was hidden from him. He kept demanding an audience, but he couldn't get it. God had a reason. He wanted to let the devil test Job, to prove to the devil and everybody reading that book that it is possible to love God even though you don't have a lot of the blessings of God. You don't love God just for his blessings. Well, God sometimes hides himself. It's a test. And purpose of test are not to destroy you. It's to make you better and better. That's why your teachers give you tests, so that you can get educated. That's why God gives you a test, so that you can get spiritual. Just as simple as that. That's the reason for testing and trials. What's the reason that God hides his face from us? Well, sometimes the reasons are discernible, as the NIV Study Bible lists out, giving the sites. I'm not going to give you the sites as I go through, but here's some of the things that the Scripture says can hinder your ability to enter into God's presence. That will hinder God from showing up to you. That will make God hidden from you. Sin, disobedience, hypocrisy, wrong motives, lack of faith, marital problems even, 1 Peter 3:7. So there's sometimes you can figure out why God's not showing up, but sometimes the reasons are impossible to determine in this life. Folks, faith is the essence of things not seen. If God makes himself not seen, you still believe in him because you know him. Many Old Testament saints experienced this experience of Deus absconditus, the hidden God. Job, I just mentioned him. Jeremiah, he kept praying for the salvation of Israel, and Israel got wiped out by the Babylonians. Elijah, after the contest with the prophets of Baal, ended up in Mount Horeb, wondering where any righteous person was as he was by himself. This sort of thing happens. But God has not really forsaken those prophets any more than he had forsaken Jesus. When Jesus said, my God, why have you forsaken me, when Jesus was on the cross? God hadn't actually abandoned Jesus, but Jesus in his humanity felt like God had abandoned him. That's a good example for us. A lot of times we feel like God has abandoned us, but no, he hasn't abandoned us. He would never abandon his children. Jesus went through that experience so he could identify with us as humans. Even as we humans experience the hidden God, so did Jesus. Now, this experience of having God hidden from one, David does not consider it to be a permanent situation. In fact, we read in Psalms 139, verse 7, a psalm that shows that exactly the opposite is true, that God is not only not hidden, but he is present all the time. Where can I go from your spirit, David says, or where can I flee from your presence? So the bottom line is God is always with us, no matter how we feel. But we get impatient, and David was impatient. How long will you hide your face from me? How long, O Lord? How many times have you prayed that prayer before? Verse 2, how long shall I take counsel in my soul? What's David debating in his soul about? What's he trying to decide? How to avoid his enemies? Because almost in every psalm, he's got enemies. And verse 4, my enemy will say. So David's got enemies here too. He's always got enemies. He was a king. Kings have enemies. How long shall I have sorrow in my heart all day long? David asked. How long will my enemy be exalted over me? Verse 3, David continues, consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Enlighten my eyes, or I'm going to die. Enlighten my eyes, or I will sleep the sleep of death. Now, what does enlighten mean? Well, light is associated with life. Eyes that can see are alive. So he says, enlighten my eyes, give me life, get me out of this mess. I don't want to die. David is praying for life in the midst of the death that is surrounding him. Now, you could say enlighten my eyes as the idea of the enlightenment, you know, wisdom, knowledge. Let me have wisdom. Let my eyes see the path that I should go on to get out of being killed by my enemies. It could be that. In fact, I really think it is, but it could mean, on the other hand, just give me life. Don't let me die, because enlightened eyes are alive eyes. If he doesn't get any wisdom or light from God, in verse 4, David's enemy will say, I've overcome him. You lose, David. And guess what? David, your God loses too, because you have trusted in the name of the Lord, and look at you. You're whipped. So God is whipped. David knows that that will happen, and he says, my adversaries will rejoice when I am shaken. So David is very concerned about what God's enemies will say and how they will take the defeat of God's people. The Lord himself was actually worried. I say worried. I use that term, of course, anthropomorphically. God never worries about anything. But God himself said he was concerned that if he wiped out the Israelites, which he should have done, as he says in Deuteronomy chapter 32, he wants to wipe out the Israelites. Verse 26, I would have said I will cut them to pieces and blot out the memory of them from mankind if I had not feared insult from the enemy, or feared that these foes might misunderstand and say, our own hand has prevailed. It wasn't the Lord who did all this. In other words, God is saying, if I wipe out the Israelites, people are not going to look back and say, oh, it was Yahweh who got the Israelites out of Egypt miraculously through the Red Sea. They're just going to say, well, Yahweh is a loser. And he said, I'm not going to let that happen to my name. So David appeals to that. Moses did too. I don't have the scriptures in front of me, but I remember Moses saying, don't do that, God. If you do that, what are your enemies going to say? David's concerned. He doesn't want to be wiped out. He's saying, God, I mean, you need to protect your name here, because if I get wiped out, you're going to get wiped out. We go down to Psalms 13, verses 5 through 6, and we will finish this audio. David continues, but I have trusted in your loving kindness. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. So David has been all despair in verses 1 through 4, and now in verses 5 through 6, he is happy as a lark. He is in total faith. Verse 5, but I have trusted. Trust is just another synonym for faith. Well, the question arises, how can David move from despair to hope so fast? In verses 1 through 4, David's in total despair, but now he's on top of the world spiritually. Well, here's some suggestions as to how this happened. The NIV Study Bible claims that David's transformation from despair to hope came only after a long time of struggle. David's recordings here in Psalm 13 is but a mere snapshot of his feelings. The psalm is a recording of David's emotions compressed in time. Writing this psalm compresses time even as written history does. That's one way you can look at it. Another way is by pointing out that David was speaking on two levels at the same time. Emotionally, he was in distress, but spiritually, his faith was strong and secure. And that's something that hyperfaith heretics, the prosperity message, the Copenhagenites often don't realize, is that you can have expressions of doubt and still believe. My favorite one is when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were threatened to be thrown into the fire by the Babylonian or Persian king. I can't remember which one it is right now. But when they were threatened to be thrown into the fire, they said, fine, king, God's going to deliver us. Ah, that's strong words. But then the next thing they say is, but even if he doesn't, we will still serve the name of the Lord our God. Even if he doesn't. So they admitted, hey, he might not do it. So faith is not necessarily contingent upon a positive confession. We see in verses 1 through 4, David did not have a positive confession, but he still believed. He believed strongly because when he got to verses 5 and 6, his confession became very positive. And he also appealed to God's past dealings with him. He says in verse 6, he has dealt bountifully with me. That's in the past. And because David knows God, he's had an experience with him. He knows that God has always delivered him. And he has. If you look at David running around in the desert, running away from Saul, God indeed had dealt bountifully with David. Here's a psalm that says the same thing about God dealing bountifully with the psalmist. It's not David. The psalmist does. The Psalm 116 does not have a named author. Psalm 116, verse 7, "Return to your rest, O my soul, for the Lord has dealt bountifully with you." So that's a good application. Count your blessings. Go back and look and see how much God has done for you in the past. And when you're in the mully grubs in the present, you think, well, you know, God's always delivered me before. He's never let me down. So why do I need to be so down in the dumps about what's going on now? Well, at any rate, David has finished his psalm on a very positive note. That's the pattern that we've seen all the way through the Davidic psalms that we've covered so far. And so on that happy note, we're finished with Psalms 13. We're now prepared to go to Psalms 14. One of my favorites, "The Fool Says There Is No God," is what we will entitle Psalm 14. I hope you stay tuned for that psalm, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.